For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to the Ref Recap Podcast on 960theref.com. Here are your hosts, Sam Franco and Ryan Goldstein.
All right, welcome back into another exciting edition of the Ref Recap Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco, Ryan Goldstein along with you, and we got plenty to get to today, some good, some bad. First and foremost, Ryan, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was nice. It was busy. I was working some, and then, you know, obviously had some great food. We do a little different. We do like a, it's not really a Jewish Thanksgiving, but we just happen to have a lot of food that you would eat at a Jewish holiday. So we did some brisket. We had some noodle kugel, which I didn't realize people didn't know what that was.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm definitely down with some brisket and noodle kugel.
So, and some cornbread. So yeah. It was, and some desserts, obviously. So it was pretty good. How was yours?
Mine was good. I got a question. You have any latkes, though, man?
Well, not yet.
Okay, you got to save those.
We save those for Hanukkah. Okay, that's coming
fair.
Up, though.
That's fair. Latkes and applesauce, man. One of my favorite things.
Yeah,
sure.
I'll have some for you.
I appreciate that. That sounds great. Yeah, my Thanksgiving was good. Obviously, spending it with family. So on Wednesday night, before Thanksgiving, for my dad's side of family, we did Thanksgiving, and it was just typical fatherly Franco Thanksgiving. Usually we've done Italian food. This time we did hibachi. So,
oh, that sounds awesome.
It was very cool, very great. Obviously, hibachi, you can't really go wrong there. So that was delicious, and very thankful to do that. And then Thursday with my grandmother and, you know, her side of the family, my mom's side of the family, definitely had a nice Thanksgiving, more traditional. I actually had a lot more responsibility in the kitchen this year than I normally do.
Now, are you a good cook?
I am a good cook.
Okay,
yes,
so you can whip a few things up.
Oh, of course.
What were your responsibilities? What did they include?
Well, the bird for the first time. You know,
oh, wow. Which, so you had the big man in the house.
Well, my grandma and I tag teamed it, but, you know, she was basically, I think, prepping me, you know, to get ready to be a person that can do that in the future.
She's passing the torch.
And I got to say, this bird turned out very nicely, very moist, which is something that can be a problem with turkeys, you know, especially when you cook them in the oven, which is what we did. But it turned out nicely. I also did my dirty rice, which is always a hit. And my grandmother took care of the stuffing. Still not something that I'm ready for yet. You know, this year was the turkey. I think next year might be the stuffing. She's passing the torch.
The dirty rice. Can you go more in depth on what that is?
It's very simple. It's just you take rice and you take a can of Campbell's consomme beef, a can of Campbell's French onion, and some butter and some water. You just kind of put all that into a baking dish, and it turns into something truly delicious.
Sounds good.
It is fantastic. So, yeah, Thanksgiving was great. And looking forward to Christmas, which is the next one on deck, obviously. Although one thing, and we'll get into the games, obviously, here in a minute. I just want to kind of talk about one thing for a second. You know, Black Friday, when did Black Friday turn into Black Friday weekend? And when did Cyber Monday turn into Cyber Week? You know what I mean? Pretty soon, it's just going to be Black November.
Right. Well, I mean, look, Black Friday starts Thursday night at 6 o'clock.
Which is asinine, by the way. Stop making people work on Thanksgiving. Okay, like you've got like Walmart and Best Buy and all these stores opening at like 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving. It's like, dude, give people a chance to digest their food.
I'm with you. It's terrible. I also stay away from all that because one, just too many people, and it's just, and I don't need anything that badly. Like, there's nothing that I need that I'm just like, oh, I need to get it on sale where I have to beat all these people to the store at 6 o'clock on Thursday night.
Yeah, which is why I rocked a little Cyber Monday. I got myself a nice jacket that normally would have cost like $240, but it was nice and marked
down. Like a winter coat or like a sport?
It's kind of like an in-betweener. It's one of those down kind of sweater jacket deals, nice. You know, from one of the, it could have been North Face, could have been Patagonia, could have been Columbia. I'm not going to say which one because they're not paying me to say it. But, you know, just a jacket that would have been nice and expensive at one point.
Okay, so a going-out jacket.
Marked down. Yeah, exactly. A nice jacket to go out in, not one that, you know, is like, you're going to be forging up Mount Everest or something. So I did do that on Cyber Monday. But, yeah, I mean, am I going to take advantage of a deal? Sure. Am I going to go out on Thursday at 5 p.m. and have to, you know, have some grandma, like, slug me with the bricks in her purse to get the last 50-inch TV? No. course.
Yeah, it's not necessary for me. But look, people who do it, they love it. Some people just like doing it because they built a tradition out of it where it's not even, they just want to go run around and try to find some deal where they don't even really care what they're getting.
Right.
It's just the point of going out on Black Friday or Thursday night and being with your friends and family. So whatever tradition you have, more power to you.
Well, if you've gotten this far in our conversation here, you clearly realize that we're trying everything we can to not talk about Georgia and Tech from this past Saturday between the hedges. But press on, we will. And unfortunately for Georgia, it just ended up being a heartbreaker there at the end where the Dogs had the lead. Dogs had that 27-14 lead, a 13-point lead. Always feels kind of weird. You know, it's not a 14-point lead, obviously. And Georgia ends up losing by one. I know Rodrigo Blankenship missed the field goal in the first quarter. But my whole thing on this, the biggest difference in this game was that Georgia settled for field goals and Tech didn't.
Right, Tech scored where they had four red zone possessions and they scored four touchdowns. Georgia had six, they only scored three touchdowns.
Right.
So the other thing is, it was kind of a microcosm of Georgia's season. You know, there were some really highs where you felt, man, this team could be really good. And then
somebody was listening to Kirby's post-game press conference.
And they didn't finish.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's the thing. It goes back to not finishing. There were three games in Sanford Stadium we couldn't finish. Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and obviously Tech. But I look at it this way, and I'm in the minority in this opinion, but if you're going to lose to Tech, which doesn't happen very often, at least have it be in a year where we're going 7-5 or 8-4 and not we're 10-1 with the chance of going to the playoff, and then that is ruined, because that would be a whole lot worse. You can look at this so many different ways. You can say this is the biggest disappointment, or you can use it as a learning experience and say, look, we don't want to ever feel this way again. You know, having them put their flag in the middle on the G or tearing out the hedges, and you say, look, I mean, that's what we're going to use this as motivation going forward, not as something that's going to hold us back.
Right. So it just ended up being a bad performance there in terms of finishing, like you said, and getting into the end zone. I think my biggest take from the game, though, was when Georgia was up 27-14, the Dogs took the foot off the gas and were like, all right, we're not going to do anything on offense here that's going to cause us to lose this game, which is funny because in the end they did something on offense which caused them to lose the game. Georgia at times has been way too conservative when aggressive play was what was called for, and they've been too aggressive when conservative play was called for this season. And I think that moment there at 27-14 when they took the foot off the gas, what's the defense supposed to think? That kind of thing bleeds through to the entire team. If the offense is going to take their foot off the gas, what's the defense supposed to do?
Right, and that also that drive that Tech scores where they have the 90-plus yard drive. Three of our top defensive backs go out in that series. It was Murray Smith, Aaron Davis, and then DeAndre Baker, and they had two big pass plays there. Just throwing that out there. I'm not saying that that's the reason we end up losing the game.
Well, why are you letting Tech have these gigantic, like, you know they're going to throw the ball because at that point of the game they have to start throwing the ball, and you still get beaten by it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is.
Well, nobody does.
Right, that's why we lost the game, and we're now 7-5. But it was just one of those things. I mean, I was listening to the game on the radio, and I'm thinking, okay, we're up 27-14. I'm feeling pretty good about this, and they score a touchdown. I'm like, it's starting to get a little dicey, but we'll probably pull it out. And then they go up 28-27. And I actually heard someone say this after. I don't remember where it was. Some post game, should they have let them score to have more time? And look, the play that the kid made for Tech was a great one because it was supposed to be a pass.
It broke down.
And then he made, he found his way into the end zone. So you kind of think, well, we shouldn't have just let them score. But then if you had let them score, we have a minute and a half left to move the ball down the field and get a field goal with only one timeout. And that was another thing. They had to burn a timeout on offense when it was either going to be a delay of game penalty, and Kirby was irate because at that point, two timeouts having in your pocket with whatever time we had left, 30 seconds.
Yeah, burning that timeout was just bad.
It was huge. So it's just little things like that which continued to plague Georgia all year, whether it was special teams mistakes, wide receivers dropping passes, Jacob Eason throwing an untimely interception. I mean, those were kind of things that just they bit us all season long.
Yeah, and another thing about play calling and being aggressive and not aggressive at certain times, it's like you stop throwing the ball, but then you get almost like nervous or whatever, and so on 2nd and 8, you decide to let Eason throw the ball, and it's like, look, why would you put the kid in that kind of position? He's a freshman. I know that he's played very well and probably better than a lot of freshmen do in that spot, not named Jalen Hurts, but You're not putting your players in the best position there to make him make that play. I think at that point, like, you had already committed to going conservative, so just run the ball.
And then punt
and make them use their timeouts, or make them, eat some of that clock. And on a 2nd and 8, maybe if you get to like 3rd and 5, throw it, but 2nd and 8, you know, just run the ball. You had success running the football. I mean, Sony Michel, 19 carries for 170 yards. Nick Chubb, 22 carries for 88 yards.
No, running the ball wasn't an issue on Saturday. No. So, and the scary thing was they passed for more yards than we did.
Yes, they did.
So, I mean, it's just a lot of things where you, if you had said these things will take place, Georgia runs for 260 plus yards, you'd say, oh, well, probably going to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, again, it goes back to, it's kind of a synopsis of the whole season, some highs and lows, and then in the end, you kind of feel like your heart's been torn out. And
yep.
But look, this was a season that we didn't know what was going to happen. There were some really optimistic times where we thought, oh, maybe we'd go 9-3, 10-2, and be representing the SEC East in Atlanta. Because the reality was, this year in the SEC East was terrible. It could have been arguably the second worst division in all of college football. I mean, that's how bad this division was. Tennessee, a team that a lot of people thought was going to be really good, they end up losing four games. Florida's back in the SEC championship game, but their offense is terrible. And you kind of look and you say, well, they're a 20-point underdog against Alabama, so you don't feel like they have any chance coming up this weekend. So it was a down year, but Georgia couldn't take advantage. But doesn't change my outlook on the future of this program either.
Right. No, I'm with you. I still think that the future is very bright. I still think that Kirby Smart can hit the ground running and recruiting this offseason and give Georgia one of the best classes they've had in years.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be really good. And look, they target an area in offensive line where they already have four players coming in or verbally committed for next year. They have a quarterback in Jake Fromm who I think can push Jacob Eason. Whether or not if he takes over the starting job or not, as long as we're building competition at key positions where you say, look, in practice, I have to be working my hardest every day. Mm-hmm. And either way, we're going to have a great player playing on Saturday. That's a good position to be in. So they're targeting offensive line. They seem to have gotten some big receivers because that was obviously an issue in the style of play they wanted to run, where they wanted to have these big receivers blocking downfield. Just wasn't what we had in Isaiah McKenzie and Terry Godwin. So you seem like they're building in the right areas. And look, if most of our players come back on defense, which there's only Maurice Smith will lose, as he's a senior, and then Davin Bellamy, Lorenzo Carter, and Dominic Sanders are juniors who should come back, but if one of them decides to go. But our defense should be really good next year. So there's pieces where you say, look, we can build off this. It's not the season we wanted, but it doesn't mean that the future of Georgia football is any bleaker.
I think the biggest thing for Georgia in the offseason is the decisions that Sony Michel and Nick Chubb will make.
Well, I think they have to go.
Both of them.
Yeah, because this I look at it. The shelf life is just so short for a running back in the NFL. That
it's a pretty deep running back class, though.
But the thing is, even if you're a third or fourth rounder, you're just trying to make it to the second contract. I don't think either of them could be first. If Sony Michel comes back and takes 150 extra hits, does he make it a first rounder? Does that really make his career any different? I don't think so, because I don't think he'd be a first rounder even if he came back and had a great year next year.
Well,
so I think realistically, for a business decision, it's the right move to leave. It'd be great to have them back, obviously, especially the leadership they would show.
Mm-hmm.
But with the two running backs you have and the freshman coming in, it's like it's probably just one of those decisions you have to make for money-wise.
I think Chubb's definitely gone. Sony is one, though, where I'm not 100%. I kind of have a gut feeling that, not that he'll come back, but that there's a much bigger chance he comes back. Chubb with the injury and everything, it's like he's got
it. There's just no reason for him to come back, because if you get another injury, you just lost your NFL career.
Right, but Sony Michel, I think, could be an interesting one. We'll see where that goes.
If he came back, it'd be great. I'd be ecstatic. I mean, because he would be an offensive leader, somebody to have to coach up these young running backs.
You have a little more time for Harrion and Holyfield to kind of get.
And then you have Carter and Swift coming in as freshmen. So it's one of those things that you'd love to have somebody in that meeting room to say, look, this is the way it's supposed to be done. Because that's how good teams, we talked about this yesterday, you want to have heir apparents at positions where mm-hmm. it's players can slowly but surely build themselves and work into a role where it's not you're forced into action immediately, where you can't do five or six things, or you're only really good at one or two, and then you can
right.
build off of those.
Right. So that's a big thing for Georgia. I think looking at next season, I think fans need to have expectations in check again. I think 2018 is a season where you can kind of say, man, that's going to be the year for Georgia. But
it's
next
so
season,
hard. That's a,
I know
and
that's
I'm the
hard.
Same
I
way.
Hard.
I agree. Realistically, I'm with you. I think 2018 is the year to be judged, Kirby Smart to be judged on. Mm-hmm. But it's hard as a fan when you're like, so we're just throwing out a whole nother season, and we have to wait.
Well, not necessarily throwing out a season. I still think Georgia could win the East next year. But I think if you're expecting Georgia to win an SEC championship and contend for the playoff next year, you're sadly mistaken. Because look at Alabama.
Oh,
that's a young football team, and they're clearly the best team in the country right now.
Well, look, Alabama, just year after year, even when they have turnover, it's just somebody next man up, somebody steps in who's a five-star player. The difference is, and this is what sucks about it all, is that Alabama has just created this image of people thinking that that can be done at every other school.
No,
and there's only a few coaches that you could step into your program. Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, and probably Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh, yeah.
Where you feel like, okay, in 2 years.
Maybe Tom Herman. We'll see what happens at Texas.
Right. But in 2 years, this guy is going to bring us to the promised land. It just doesn't work like that everywhere. And that's this false, you know, hope that almost Nick Saban has given everybody else. And then he doesn't understand why coaches win 10 games and they get fired.
You're not putting Coach O right there at LSU? No, I'm just kidding. I am very happy he got that job, though.
I watched some of his press conference. He's great.
He's fantastic. He is a breath of fresh air for college football. And the fact that there is not a better fit in the country in terms of the region you're representing, in terms of just him. Like he's like a big old Cajun guy at a Cajun school, basically.
No, he's perfect.
Other than like maybe Louisiana Lafayette. Like if he were the head coach of Louisiana Lafayette, he could double as the mascot and as the coach, be the Raging Cajun there. But no, I mean, it's the perfect fit.
Now, as a Georgia fan, though, it makes me happy that they hired it, because you don't look at LSU and now say, wow, okay. So they got Tom Herman. If he had gone there.
Oh, he's a hell of a recruiter, and that's the thing. What if he does get Lane Kiffin over there to run that offense?
Yeah, but I still think if I'm going, you know, match wits for wits with Ed Orgeron, I'll take my chances versus matching wits with Nick Saban on the other sideline. Even that's if true. You have the best player, because a lot of these schools get great players, but then can you coach them up while they're there? And look, he could turn out to be Dabo Swinney what he was,
exactly.
You know, 4 or 5 years ago at Clemson when he got the job, and people were like, who's this Dabo Swinney guy? He was the wide receivers coach.
Right.
So it could happen like that. But I'm not as worried if they had gotten someone like Herman.
Well, I heard the guys on the home team talking about this when they were like, you know, you're going to fire Les Miles and hire the coach that was fired by Ole Miss. It's like, I don't think you can make that comparison right now because things change.
Right.
I think the best example of that is Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll was in the NFL with the Patriots and the Jets and was terrible.
He was awful.
And then he goes to college at USC.
And he was also the fourth or fifth guy to get looked at USC. It wasn't like he was
right
on their top of their, you know, wish list.
But he got that opportunity, and he excelled at it. Then he goes to the Seahawks and wins a Super Bowl. So
right,
the experiences, you know, you are what your experiences are, and he went through some bad times, but now he's up near the top of the mountain. So I think that you can learn from your experience. You can learn from your past, and I'm sure that Coach O learned a lot from his miserable time in Oxford, Mississippi.
No, at that point, I agree with 100%. Look, only time will tell. We'd like to think we all know about all these coaches and how they're going to fare. Look, Kirby Smart could end up being Will Muschamp and get fired from Georgia in 3 or 4 seasons, or Kirby Smart could end up being Nick Saban. Hopefully, he lies somewhere in the middle and we can get, you know, a national championship at some point in time. But you just don't really know, and it's only time will tell, and you have to be a little patient before you just start making these accusations or saying or, you know, professing someone as this all-time greatest coach ever.
Right. So I think you do have to wait, and I think Georgia fans have to wait on Georgia to be like really successful. Again, next season you're replacing a bunch of offensive linemen. You could be replacing two very high-caliber running backs. So I think Georgia can be good next season. I think that Florida will be down because they lose a lot of those Muschamp defensive recruits. And, you know, can McElwain keep the success going? Tennessee, I think, is in just all sorts of, you know, trouble with what's going on there. They just lost to Vanderbilt. I know we know what that's like here in Athens. And, you know, I think that the SEC East is going to be up for grabs once again. So I think Georgia can win it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be this world-beating team because – for those of you who have been sleeping under a rock, the SEC East is pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's bad.
Speaking of something that isn't terrible, how about the Falcons? 38-19 against the top-ranked defense in the NFL. The Falcons went out there and dropped 38 points on them. And those were all offensive points, by the way.
Yeah, no, look, the Falcons, they're on a roll. The way I look at the Falcons now, I'm like, I'm so pumped, but I'm also so nervous at the same time because I actually feel like we're in a position where we could do really, really well, but then Tampa's creeping up right behind you at 6-5. You're playing Kansas City this weekend. You know, it's like at one point you're like, oh, this division is, we're running away with it, and now you feel like you could even maybe get to the second seed and get a bye, but you also could be overtaken by the team right behind you and be out of, you know, hosting a playoff game altogether.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but I will say this about Tampa. They've got a much tougher schedule down the stretch than Atlanta does.
They got to play the Chargers this week, and they end up playing Dallas in a few weeks.
Exactly. So their schedule tougher. And they also, yeah, they're at Dallas and at San Diego.
And they have to play in New Orleans twice, I believe. So it's, yeah, I mean, their schedule shapes out to be much more difficult than ours. But it also scares me as a Falcons fan that you're like, okay, you have San Francisco and L.A., teams you should beat. But are you going to beat them?
Right.
I mean, last year we played San Francisco and we didn't beat them.
Well, that's why this weekend is so big against Kansas City. I mean, if you Falcons can go out and win this game, you only need two more wins to get to 10.
Right.
And I think you get to 10 wins, you're winning the NFC South.
I think so, too. Because I said all along, it was this two – it's like basically three two-game stretches. If you could split the front and the back end and then
win the
two in the middle. Yeah,
you can't lose to L.A. You can't lose to San Francisco. You got to win those games. And that's the thing. I know that we're thinking about the NFC South, just get the NFC South, but the Falcons are thinking about possibly getting the number two seed.
Right, because Tampa's win over Seattle was big in that sense. Seattle's
yes.
7-3-1, and then Detroit is one game. Well, they're 7-4, but they're right. But then they have more conference wins, so
right
now they're ahead of us.
But that all evens itself out
sure
at the end of the season.
So, look, I mean, the Falcons have every opportunity to – they're not going to get the one seed because that's Dallas.
No, Dallas has
that.
Got
so you're
that,
basically
yeah
playing for the second seed in a bye. But it's awesome. I mean, we would have never sat here and told ourselves 3 months ago that we would be talking now about Falcons being 7-4 with an opportunity against Kansas City to almost, you know, shore up a division and have a chance of getting the second seed in the NFC.
Well, when we did this after that first Falcons game, you know, I mean, I think we're all just doom and gloom. The Falcons are going to go 0-6.
We were like, we're not
season
even going to talk about the Falcons for the rest of the podcast.
Right.
We might throw the score in there.
Yeah.
But otherwise, we're probably not going to talk to you guys about the Falcons.
But how things can change. And just going back to the game on Sunday, how about Taylor Gabriel? And how about the awesome troll job by the Falcons
yes
on Twitter where they're like, thanks, Browns. You know, they tagged the Browns on Twitter for the Browns released him. I believe he played in their, like, season opening game. Gabriel did. And then he got cut. And it's like, yeah, thanks a lot. You know, one man's trash is another man's treasure, I guess. And Taylor Gabriel, that guy has some wheels.
Yeah, and the one – and, you know, another move to give Kyle Shanahan some credit for, he was the one who had coached him in Cleveland and said, look – and they mentioned this on the broadcast Sunday. If this guy falls on and, you know, somehow they cut him and he comes through waivers, we need to sign him. It's just an added weapon. Because now when you're the Falcons and, you know, you're a defensive team game planning for them, you say, okay, we stop Julio. Oh, great. Well, now we got to try to stop Tevin Coleman, Devontae Freeman, Mohamed Sanu on the other side, Austin Hooper. Oh, wow. Now there's this guy, Taylor Gabriel. And then Justin Hardy had a great catch in the first drive. So it's just, there are weapons everywhere where you feel like, okay, if you stop somebody, there's somebody else that's going
to
step up.
Well, that's the thing. They're going to have to score a lot of points because we found out that Desmond Trufant's going to be out for the season. You're down your best corner. Jalen Collins played pretty well against Arizona, I thought. But you also found out that Adrian Claiborne is out for a month with a torn MCL. So you're starting to feel the attrition there when it comes to injuries. But those are defensive injuries, and the Falcons have already been kind of, you know, shaky on defense. I thought they played very well against Arizona. I thought Deion Jones had a heck of a game.
Yeah, they responded well. I mean, that first drive, they went right down the field, just like Philadelphia had done to us, you know, the week before the bye. Mm-hmm. And you go, okay, is this going to be another game? We're going to have a shootout. But no, they started to step it up. The pass rush has been exponentially better this year.
Yes.
Vic Beasley looks like a player that was worthy of
and
a top 10 draft pick.
It was a great acquisition.
Even Brooks Reed played a little bit.
He did.
You know, played well.
Devondre
Campbell had an interception on Sunday. So, I mean, there's pieces. Keanu Neal had another big hit, which they ended up calling a penalty, which was...
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. Larry Fitzgerald lowered his
head.
I know.
When the target zone is, you know, you can't see what I'm doing. My hands are about 5 inches away from each other because there's no room to hit.
But, like, when the receiver lowers their head like that, I thought it's supposed to not be a penalty.
I don't know. But
I mean, that was
the
crazy.
The hit 2 weeks ago in Philadelphia was worse
of course
than the hit on Sunday against Larry Fitzgerald.
He likes to hit. That's what we know.
But, look, I mean, all the rookies that they've drafted have really stepped up and played well. Even Brian Poole, the undrafted rookie free agent out of Florida, mm-hmm, has played, you know, some key snaps for them. So while the defense, like you said, they're going to have to score a lot of points, but if the defense could hold other teams to 21 or 24 – I like our chances.
No, I agree with you. I think that the defense, again, they just have to kind of tread water, if you will, and hope that the offense has – that's the thing. This team is going to live and die by their offense. If the offense has a bad day, they're not going to win the football game.
Right, and the defense has to get turnovers. That's the thing. Because if you're going to let up a lot of points, at least give the offense maybe an extra possession or two, mm-hmm, by creating a turnover to hope that we can just win a game by 14 points, even if it's 44-30.
Yeah, and I thought it was good to see Devontae Freeman. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be this 100 yards a game running back. It was good to see Tevin Coleman get back into things. He's clearly, they're still working him in to the offense. But Devontae was 60 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns. So that's really all you can ask for with a team that's going to be dominated by their passing attack. And it was great to see. I mean, Sanu had a very good game. Gabriel had a good game. Hardy made some big catches. And in a game where you're going up against Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, you kind of have to game plan around Julio Jones. Like, you're like, these are really good corners, and they're going to stick with you the whole time. So that's going to leave some other guys open, and that's definitely what the Falcons did in terms of exploiting that Arizona defense. I kind of looked at this game, and I thought, it seems like they're going to attack Arizona the same way they attacked Denver.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With the
trying to match the running backs and linebackers.
Jumping around and then finding other guys, and that's what they did.
Well, and it was also nice to see the Falcons respond after the opening drive they had in the second half where they got sacked. I guess it was like 5 out of 6 plays because it was, you know, 2 or 3 sacks, and they got Arizona got a penalty, so we get – and you go, okay, is this going to be kind of the second half where we just start to falter down the stretch? But no, look, the Falcons end up responding, play well in the second half. Really at the end of the game, you were like, this is not even close.
Oh, no.
38-19, a blowout. Falcons win. We move on to Kansas City, another really good team.
That's right. Kansas City is a very good team. That defensive line is monstrous with guys like Justin Houston on it. Tamba Hale, I believe, is still
in Kansas City. He's in Kansas City,
These guys move around.
D. Ford from Auburn is also there.
That's right. Yeah, that's another guy. So they've got a very solid front that the offensive line's going to have, I'm sure, some trouble with. But if the Falcons, like we said, can win that one, it'd be huge. They go up against Checkdown Charlie, a.k.a. Alex Smith, who I think has like the third most active wins as a quarterback, which is kind of blows your mind if you think about it. But he's a guy that's been on some successful teams there in Kansas City, and he doesn't get hurt all that much.
Yeah, and you think of Kansas City, they're not an explosive offense, but they do have some playmakers. Travis Kelce, one of the better tight ends in the league. Andy Reid is one of the great offensive minds. So while it's not a team.
Jeremy Maclin in the wide receiver.
Yeah, it's not a team where they're, you know, like Arizona where you feel, okay, we got to worry about David Johnson, we got to worry about Larry Fitzgerald, this, that, and the other. You know, they can score points, and like you said, their defense is really good. This would be a huge win for the Falcons at home. You got to take care of, you know, the Georgia Dome. That's first and foremost.
Yes.
The thing that scares me about it is early in Matt Ryan's career, it was like every game he played in the Georgia Dome, super successful. Now, the Georgia Dome doesn't just seem like a home field advantage. You watch games on TV. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm watching them all on TV. In the first quarter, there's nobody in the Dome.
Yeah, and that's always been kind of an issue with the Atlanta fan base, and it does get kind of crapped on, if you will. That it's sad because there are a lot of really good sports fans in Atlanta, but sometimes the city on the whole doesn't represent the way they should. I mean, I went to that Hawks game last Tuesday.
Did they win that game?
Before Thanksgiving. No, they got destroyed by the Pelicans.
Oh, so that was the first of, like, their losing streak.
Right, but the sad thing about it was, like, it was a Tuesday night, so I get it. But it's also Tuesday of Thanksgiving where all these people should have, like, time off and stuff, but yeah, it was a very sparsely attended game. But, you know, Atlanta is what it is. There are good sports fans in Atlanta, so I don't think you can throw the whole city
on the bus. Oh, no, I don't think so either. I'm just saying it's unfortunate when you see, because the Falcons are having a great season. You say, look, you know, you got to make where you play a home field advantage because they have 3 of the next 5 games there. And the nice thing is the next couple of games, you're not looking at these really stout offenses where we've kind of gotten the elite quarterbacks off of our schedule. So hopefully our defense can hold up. Like you said, with the injuries to Trufant and now Claiborne, you know, injuries are starting to plague us, but you find guys to step in. It's exciting, though. I mean, it's an exciting time to be a Falcons fan, and nobody would have said that at the beginning of the season. So you just got to enjoy it. Because, like, I've realized with this with Georgia after this season, you got to enjoy the wins when they come because the losses will be there. Now, you'd like to think that every year.
Hold on, wait, stop. I got to stop you. Ryan, do you have any parting shots you'd like to give our fans?
I know, I say it every week, but I'm like starting to realize it more and more with the Falcons. I just, like, every week when they win, I just got to enjoy it because when you win a game and then you look at it and you're like, oh man, we could have done this, I'm not the coach, I'm just a fan.
Right.
I got to enjoy it because we're not going to win every game.
No, you're 100% correct. So great to see the Falcons get a win over the Cardinals. If they can win this one against Kansas City coming up this weekend, you got to hope they can do that because I know we said when you looked at it, split the first two, win the middle two, split the last two. But if you win the first two, you make it a lot easier on yourself. And who knows where Carolina's going to be. They just lost a really tough game.
And New Orleans is kind of on a surge. They're playing a little bit better now.
That's the thing. Carolina lost a really tough game at Oakland, and that might have been, you know, the last bullet in their chamber, so to speak.
You know,
They might be, you know, packing it in at this point.
Yeah, look, it's awesome. Whatever happens the rest of the season, the Falcons, you don't feel like they're the same team from last year. They don't seem to be faltering down the stretch. Their offense is in really good shape, and their defense is making improvements week by week, some weeks more than others. But you feel like areas that you were concerned about before the season don't keep you up at night as much, like the pass rush. Thinking about the Falcons getting a sack before the season started, you were just like, that's like a shooting star.
Yeah. Well, now that Georgia's football season's over, yeah, we'll talk Georgia football, especially going into the bowl game. But we'll switch up at throw some Hawks and some basketball in here coming up in the weeks ahead. So looking forward to doing that. For Ryan Goldstein, I'm Sam Franco. Of course, you can always catch the Ref Recap Podcast on 960theref.com. Follow along on Twitter at 960theref. I'm at Sam J. Franco. He's at The Real Rye Guy 19. And this is the Ref Recap Podcast. We'll be back next week with another exciting episode, so make sure to check it out at 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.